Now, there's a new book by Joe Geraghty, Out of Sight, a story of Ireland's blind and vision impaired sports people. And we have two of the people who are featured in Joe's book sitting in front of me now. We have Paul McCormack, who plays blind golf, and rally car navigator Zara McFadden. Good afternoon to you both.
Thanks for having us, Ray.
Yeah. Hey, Ray, how are you doing? How's it going?
Good to see you. Paul, I spoke to you, well, I met you before as you were in the studio. And Zara, you came into our Galway studio before.
Yeah, definitely a couple of years back now.
Yeah. So why? You just got your licence. But I think that was it, wasn't it? You were in the papers because you just got your licence.
Yeah, so that was back in July 2018. I just got my Motorsport Ireland rally co-driver licence. But I've definitely come a long way since then. So it's great to be back in.
Yeah, yeah. And thanks for coming in. And Paul, I listened back to our chat. That was back in 2016.
A long time ago.
A long time ago. So just for people, you're from Donegal originally. You're the youngest captain in the NYPD ever.
Yes.
Yes. And as a result of cleaning rubble away from ground zero after 9/11, you became visually impaired.
Correct.
That's the brief bit of it, yeah.
That's the Reader's Digest.
Yeah, that's the citation version of it. Okay, so Zara McFadden, people are going to be fascinated by you in particular, and we'll get to Paul, but navigating a rally car and being visually impaired, it I'd say it raises a few eyebrows, does it?
Absolutely. It's definitely not two things one would ever put together in a sentence when you say motorsport and then some with a vision impairment. But I suppose, yeah, it was something that I always wanted to do, and it was something that I suppose I was lucky enough to get the opportunities put in front of me to take. It's definitely something that I have grown into as the time has gone on. So back when I would have spoken to you first, it was all about just trying to do it and find out would I be able to, because to be honest, I didn't know myself at the time. The answer is yes. Since then, I have gone on to become a member of the Motorsport Ireland Elite Co-Driver Academy, one of five in the country. So yeah, it's definitely gone from strength to strength, and I've had the opportunities put together by a lot of people. And I suppose in terms of motorsport and what we can offer to people, and it's covered in the book as well, through my role in Vision Sports Ireland, we've also been able to offer that to other people who are blind and vision impaired through our Zero Limits track day as well.
So your family are steeped in motorsport?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up with both of my parents competing in motorsport. My dad is a driver, my mom is a driver and a co-driver. So I think there wasn't much of a chance of me not picking it up. I didn't definitely pick it up from the wind. So.
And you were born with congenital problems?
Yeah, so I have a condition called albinism and nystagmus. So the albinism affects my hair, skin and eyes in terms of the pigment, and then also a lot of light sensitivity. So when it's really bright outside, I can struggle to see a lot more versus where I'm inside like today. Then I have nystagmus as well, which means my eyes uncontrollably move from left to right all the time and I can't focus that. So the two of them together make the vision impairment. Okay. So I have that since birth. When I was born originally, they think that I actually had no vision at all. And around 6 months, they think I may have got a little bit of it. They don't fully know. So I suppose I'm quite lucky that I do have some vision, and I'm always every day grateful of that. But yeah, that's kind of how it affects it. So when you consider being in a car and the movement and everything that comes with it, it's probably not something you would consider to be an easy task.
No. And when did you realise that maybe driving wasn't going to be an option for you?
Yeah,
what age
so
were you?
I was around 12. So I went in to see my ophthalmologist at the time. And basically my first question was, so like, I won't mind, like there'll be no problem with me driving or anything. They're like, so they had to break that news that day. And to be honest, of course, at the time I was devastated because I grew up in a house where there was literally cars everywhere. You were trying to get around cars. Dad has now built basically a car park onto our house. There's so many around the place. But yeah, I found out when I was 12 that I wouldn't have that opportunity to kind of follow my parents' footsteps and become a driver, but didn't take me too long to realise on the way out, I was probably not even at the car by the time I asked the question, do you think it might mean I can't be a navigator? And then, yeah, so that would have been around the age of 12. And then when I was 17, I got signed off to get the licence.
So you have a certain amount of vision.
Yeah.
Right. But still, there are huge challenges.
Absolutely. So in the way that my vision would be, I don't have field loss or anything. So I don't have like a certain section of my vision that I don't have. It's just I have all of it, but just not as good as everyone else. So it's kind of like nearly like looking through the back of a binoculars. We can see that everything is there, but it's just not focused, basically. So like I can see that there's writing on the book in front of you, but I couldn't tell you what it said. So it's just basically things aren't as clear for me. So like when you're in motorsport and you're looking at clocks that are far away, I can't necessarily see what the clock is. So you have to think of little things on how we can adjust to that.
I suppose the fascinating thing is that you are telling another person what to do. So their safety is your responsibility.
Absolutely. And I suppose with that then, when it comes to motorsport and being a co-driver, you generally tend to move from driver to driver. So you have to actually go in and sell yourself. So when someone hears that you're coming in, oh yeah, grand, no problem. Oh yeah, by the way, I have a vision impairment. It's something that people go, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. But I've gone on to show that that actually doesn't necessarily affect what it is, because I've gone and I've found the alternative ways to do things. So I read what are called. So for anyone who isn't familiar with what a co-driver or a navigator, it's the same two words for the same thing. What I do is I tell the driver where to go, but that's done through very detailed description of the road that we have in advance called pace notes. So I describe them to the drivers. So the pace notes basically is a book that I have in front that thankfully is actually quite accessible. So you can either write them yourself, which is fine because I can make them as big as I like if the driver chooses to do that.
I've done that in the past, yeah.
If the driver chooses to buy them off a company, they actually tend to be pretty large print and bold as it is, because when anybody is doing it, when you're looking at a page in a car, you want it to be pretty big because your head is moving and you're moving side to side. So it's actually something that's probably, without even knowing, quite accessible already, because I don't really have to make a lot of changes. Certain things I found as I've gone on a little bit, I've changed the page colour to be yellow so it absorbs a little bit of the light if the sun is shining. It's not as bright as the white page on my eyes. Little things like that that I've adapted as time has gone on. But from that, I read out those pace notes. So it might be like one left and one right and two right. I then, that describes the road to the driver head. So basically it's you get from point A to point B as quick as you can. For the driver, for me describing that, it helps them because it helps them to know how quick they can go through the next corner. Yeah. So I have to be three or four corners ahead at all times.
You're amazing. You're amazing.
I might get some tips from her, because anytime I tell my wife where to go when we're driving, I need to get the head taken off.
That's a different thing completely, Paul. Okay. So I was saying, you left Donegal in the 80s.
I did. Yeah.
And you went over to America and you sprinted up the ladder in the NYPD.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it was. I started off in the South Bronx, the 4-2 precinct as a cop, the 4-6 as a sergeant, the 4-5 as a lieutenant. Then I got promoted to captain with 9 years on the job and became the commanding officer of the 41st precinct.
At 29.
Apache. Yeah.
Oh.
So, yeah, it was pretty quick. I hit the tests all in the right at the right time. And it was a great time. I mean, for me, coming from Donegal, I grew up on a small farm in Donegal in the mid-80s, early to mid-80s. It was the Charlie Haughey tighten your belt strap era, where it was a really bad recession. And it was either emigrate or go on the dole. I had the good fortune of having an American passport. So I emigrated to New York. And for me, after, you know, working in Donegal on a farm, it's very hard work, you know, and but getting into the police department, it was a dream come true to me. A lot of fun.
So you're captain of a precinct and 9/11 hits, and everybody knows what happened there. You were part of the team that were clearing the rubble.
Yeah, I spent 3 months down there.
So this wasn't part of your job? You were volunteering to do this?
It was part of our job.
Part of your job, right.
Yeah, no, it was all hands on deck.
Right.
It was basically our precinct stuff kind of like stopped. But we were doing probably 16, 17-hour shifts 7 days a week down there. And it was, you would go down to Ground Zero. You would help out. You'd have a skeleton crew at your precinct. And you'd work down there, go home, get some rest.
And the work
and go right
was
back
what?
At it.
Putting bricks into wheelbarrows and wheeling it off-site? Or
pretty much, yeah. We were bucket brigade, clearing out the rubble. And then it was eventually got to securing the site. It's hard to describe the amount of devastation that was. When I first saw it, it was breathtaking. It was sad and it was breathtaking, the amount of devastation. Because usually when you drove down to Lower Manhattan, you would always use the Twin Towers as your, you know, as your geographic pointer to know where you were. And driving down there, they just were gone. It was a dust cloud and they were gone, and it was heartbreaking. And but to see them, it was like 50, 60 stories of just a mountain of rubble, of bent steel and crushed concrete. And I looked at it, we're never going to get out of this. But it was an amazing job that was done by the first responders, by the rescue workers, by the city of New York. I always say it, I was never, ever more proud to be an American than I was at that time, right? It was...
Despite assurances from various people, there was a lot of dust, a lot of chemicals. Nobody had any measure of this, because it was nothing compared to this had ever happened previously.
There was no plan, there was no patrol guide procedure for this. You handle other jobs, you've always got something in our New York patrol guide, but this was unknown to us.
And as well as being the youngest captain ever in the NYPD, you were also a sharpshooter, so you had a very good shot, and you went in twice a year to show how good a shot you were.
Well, everybody does in the police. You got to get requalified twice a year up at the range up in the Bronx, and It wasn't until 6 months after 9/11 when I went to requalify that I noticed I thought my goggles were fogging up, and I started missing a few shots, and I was like, what the hell's going on here? And just my vision just started deteriorating over the next 4 to 5 years, to the point where I couldn't shoot and I couldn't drive anymore. If you can't shoot or can't drive, you're not much use as a cop, right? So I had to retire. And you know, for me, it was...
And were you compensated?
Well, you know, you got your pension from the NYPD, but compensated, no. I mean, like, it's you got your health benefits and you get your pension from the New York City Police Department. Right. But aside from that, you got to live your life.
And were you ever told that there was a direct relationship between what happened to your eyes and clearing Ground Zero?
Well, I have a hereditary condition.
Right.
And what they believe is the... chemicals brought it on. The chemicals and the toxins and the dust brought it on. So it's they'll never know.
Yeah.
There's like I'm part of the annually I go to the Mount Sinai, the hospital in New York, the Mount Sinai. They have the 9/11 medical monitoring program, and there's I think 70,000 people go there every year because there's a lot of people dying every week from cancers and diseases that they've contracted while working there. And this is 23 years later.
Wow.
And it's actually, a lot of people don't know it. And like we're having an event to commemorate 9/11 this year in Dublin and in Cork, Cork City Hall. My wife and I set the exhibition up, our Ground Zero exhibition up in Cork City Hall. We set it up. So it opened today, but we're officially opening it on 9/11.
Yeah.
And thanks to all the Lord Mayor of Cork City and everybody down there, Barry and Kieran and everybody. But they treated us very well down there. And anybody who wants to go, and it's open to the public now down there. But one of the things we're doing, Ray, is we're planting a survivor tree to honor the victims and all those who have died since then. And a wonderful, it's a 9/11 remembrance garden in Kinsale, County Cork. They planted 343 trees there a year after 9/11, one for each firefighter that was killed. And we're planting a survivor tree from New York there on September 11th this year.
Great. So, you were very active before you played GAA and all that sort of thing. So sport, in a way, was taken from you when you lost your sight. You returned to Ireland. Five children, is it?
Five kids.
Your wife's originally from Dublin, so you returned to. And then life was going on. And how did you get into the golf?
Well, you mentioned Joe Geraghty there. My kids go to, when they were in national school, they went to St. Fintan's National School up in Sutton.
Yeah.
And they had a fundraising golf outing. And one of the teams was a man short. And it was the morning of the golf outing. They said, Paul, listen, would you mind coming playing golf with us?
And you said?
I said, Jesus, I couldn't hit snow over a rope. I haven't hit a ball in 13 years. I can't see it.
Yeah.
And they're like, we need you to fill out the team. So I went and I played. I had 4 or 5 pars that day, and I ran into Joe Geraghty, and Joe, who's visually impaired, big sportsman himself, was on the board of Vision Sports Ireland. Said, why don't you play blind golf? I'm like, blind golf? What the hell are you talking about? And it's like, my reaction is the reaction a lot of people get when it comes to blind and visually impaired sports. There's a lot of people probably listening that have no idea that there's sports out there.
Well, the Paralympics are on, so they,
say Paralympics. A lot of people don't, like, there's two wonderful athletes representing Ireland tonight. You know, best of luck to them in the finals tonight. But again, a lot of people don't have no idea that the resources in sports are out there for their children who are visually impaired. And for me, having been such an avid sportsman, I gave it up cold turkey for 13, 14 years. And it was an emotional experience to be able to get out there and play again.
Yeah.
And
now you've, is it three British Opens and 2 American Opens?
2 US Open, 3 British, yeah. And I won a couple other tournaments. But it's about getting out there, traveling, having fun. I love playing golf. It's a great game. I play up at the Jameson Links up in Portmarnock. I think I'm the only disabled member up there, but they don't give me any quarter up there, and I don't ask for it either. I'm treated as one of the boys, and that's the way I want it, and it's great.
And I was saying the Paralympics is on, which is, you know, as well as vision impaired, other people with disabilities taking part, and like it started, I think, for a lot of people in 2012 with the London Olympics and Paralympics and the way it was treated. And isn't it amazing to see what has happened in the last, you know, 10, 12 years?
It's brilliant. I mean, being blind or visually impaired can be a very, very lonely place. Lonely, dark place, pardon the pun. But it's hard to beat getting out there, any sport. And if anybody listening here has a child who's visually impaired or blind, there's help out there with people like as a Joe Geraghty, Chris White from Vision Ireland. These are soldiers out there working for us, helping us. They're great people. Joe just became the president of Vision Sports Ireland, and he did that wonderful book on highlighting brilliant sports people.
Out of Sight is the book, Joe Geraghty. And Sarah, you work with Sports Ireland.
Yeah, with Vision Sports Ireland.
Sorry, to spread the message as well.
Absolutely. Like it's our role. We're the national governing body for blind and vision impaired sport. We're also, as Paul mentioned, a subsidiary of Vision Ireland. So it's great for us, I suppose. We're there to try and spread the message that sport can and is accessible to people who are blind and vision impaired. So whether that's through programmes, events, training, education opportunities for coaches. So if somebody is within a club and they feel like, oh, we have a vision impaired member, or we know somebody, or that, we run training, education opportunities. We have courses, we can do specific things. We have training and education manuals for people. We do a range of different things. It's our job to make sure the sport is accessible to people and to make sure that people with the who are blind and vision impaired can take part in a sport or physical activity of their choice. And that's so important. And there's 60 plus chapters in that book that are all from a range of different sports, whether it's golf or athletics or swimming or motorsport or whatever that is. We see that in Ireland we have such high success rates with vision impaired sport, and we want to keep that up and make sure that people who are blind and vision impaired have those opportunities.
And unlike Sarah, Paul, you had full sight.
Yes.
And lost it.
It sucks, but it's life, yeah, and you gotta get on and live life. And I mean, I'm thankful because, as I said to you earlier, there's a lot of friends of mine and people that I've worked with that are passing away every week from diseases and cancers and stuff that they've contracted from working at Ground Zero. So I thank God for what I have, and I try and live life to the best that I can every day. It's life is good. Yeah. And if we get Donegal to win an All-Ireland, it'll top everything off.
And what about you? What about are your contemporaries still in the NYPD and working away?
Say that again, Ray.
Your contemporaries, lads that you joined the force with.
A lot of guys I joined are really high-ranking members of the force right now. There's two of my friends that became police commissioners in the NYPD. So a lot of my contemporaries are high up in the NYPD right now. And I'm glad to see it. It's great.
Yeah. How does Sutton compare to New York?
It's a lot slower, but it's nice. It's a lovely area, Sutton by the Sea. It's fantastic. The people up there are wonderful. And it's a great place.
And what age are your children?
My oldest boy is 20. He's actually in college in St. Bonaventure in upstate New York.
Right.
And my twin boys are 18. They're at Belvedere and Glensdale Abbey. They're doing their leaving cert this year.
Right.
And my youngest boy is 16. He's also at Belvedere.
Right.
And my beautiful princess of a daughter is 10 years old. She's at Sutton Park School up in Sutton. Love her to bits. She's the best.
Right. Five children. When's your next race, Sarah?
I'm not sure at the moment, to be honest. So taking a little bit of time out. So I did a lot of championships altogether. So as for the next one, I'm not 100% sure, but I have no doubt and very soon doing a bit of volunteer stuff and supporting where I can and all of that side of things as well, because I think it's great to get the opportunity to do from both sides of the car as well.
And Paul, before we leave, you just remind people of what's happening with the tree and everything, and what are the things, events that people can attend?
There are. There's 40 plus firefighters coming over from the FDNY. They're coming over on Friday. Actually, Thursday they're coming over, and they're doing a charity cycle with the firefighters from Ireland. They're going from the 9/11 memorial in the Phoenix Park. They're cycling all the way down the East Coast through every firehouse, and they're winding up in Kinsale on September 11th. So they're doing it for Avine's Pink Tie, which is a great cause for a charity for the kids with cancer in Ireland. It's a wonderful cause. But they're going to be going down the East Coast, and the event is on September 11th in Kinsale in the evening. Everybody's welcome to come to it. It's a very emotional and wonderful event.
And the book that features Paul and Zara is Joe Geraghty's Out of Sight, and Jason Smith's story is in there as well, and I think about 35 other stories as well of people who are vision impaired and blind and taking part in sports. Thanks, Zara. Thanks, Paul. Thank you very much. Thank you.